kind of keep an eye on the Orioles game, also on the East Coast. They're set to kick off at 3:05 tomorrow, so I'll keep an eye on that one. That one, of course, being played on the East Coast, that's really the only game to keep an eye on, as Boston's going to be away, New York is going to be away as well, so the only one really left to keep an eye on is going to be Baltimore versus the Angels, which, of course, would be Corbin Burns' first game with his new team, the Baltimore Orioles. We have more news on the Orioles coming up here regarding their ownership in a second, but as opening day right around the corner, I've often talked about on this show how MLB, the Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, time and time again has just put on a masterclass of how to make themselves as irrelevant as possible. I talked last week about their logic and their thinking behind having opening day a week before everybody else's opening day in Korea at 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, I'm sure there was tons of fans that woke up at 5 o'clock to get ready for a 6 a.m. start for opening day. Sure, I'm sure many fans on the East Coast did that. Yeah, right. So that was making themselves irrelevant, number one. Number two here is MLB. Do you really want to compete with the Sweet 16 tomorrow? Do you think that that's a battle that you're going to win? Everybody loves March Madness. I said it last week. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Basketball on 24/7 for a sports fan. What's not to love? In MLB, your big idea was, yeah, we're going to compete with March Madness, Sweet 16 on Thursday. Why didn't you just have the games today? Or, yes, excuse me, yeah, today. Why didn't you just have opening day on Wednesday rather than Thursday? That way you're not competing with a major sporting event. I don't know. Is that a dumb idea? And anybody want to comment on that? Rather than compete with March Madness, Sweet 16 games, where tomorrow you're going to have four great games starting at primetime hours of 7 o'clock at night. MLB is going to have to compete with that rather than just do it today, have opening day today on a Wednesday where you're not really competing. Sure, you have NBA regular season going on. You have NHL regular season. But you're not competing with Sweet 16 basketball. And by the way, it's some great games. We have a great field still out there in the March Madness. You're not competing with that. I don't know. Just a thought. Just an idea. Once again, the MLB really doing a great job of just staying as irrelevant as possible. It truly is a masterclass, what they've done over the past few years of just maintaining a relevancy throughout the board. With that being said, get into some more MLB stuff. One of the big-name free agents still available as of 24 hours ago was Jordan Montgomery, starting pitcher formerly with the World Series champion Texas Rangers. Well, Montgomery has reached a deal with a new team, the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks have agreed on a one-year, $25 million contract that includes a vesting player option for a second season. So once again, Scott Boras's clients this offseason taking a big pay cut. We talked about all the players that Scott Boras had represented heading into this free agency period this offseason in the MLB. Cody Bellinger, who coming into the offseason was seeking a $200 million plus contract. Instead, he gets $80 million from the Chicago Cubs. Blake Snell was looking for a $300 million plus contract. He declined $168 million from the Yankees and instead ended up with $62 million from the San Francisco Giants, much less than $300 million. Matt Chapman, a Boras guy, he was seeking a $150 million plus contract. He declined a $100 million plus extension from the Toronto Blue Jays and instead signed a $54 million contract with the Giants. JD Martinez was seeking $50 million plus in free agency. He declined a $15 million contract from San Francisco and instead got a $12 million contract from the New York Mets. And of course, Jordan Montgomery was seeking $170 million plus in free agency. He instead signs a $25 million contract. Scott Boras, a rough offseason for the MLB's quote-unquote super agent, who has all these big name clients and tries to get as much money as possible for them. He did not do that this offseason. A rough, rough, rough offseason for Scott Boras. And as I mentioned last week, he's going to have even more prolific big name free agent clients entering the offseason next year. So keep an eye on that as Scott Boras's clients. We're used to seeing those Scott Boras represented guys get paid in a major way. That wasn't the case. He came into the offseason with big expectations. He had these values on his clients that MLB team said, no, that's way too high. We're not paying that. We're not biting at that. And Scott Boras' clients ended up with less money, way less money, as I just showed you, in free agency this offseason. But with that being said, a great pickup by the Arizona Diamondbacks as they continue to kind of retool their rotation. Last year, Brandon Pfaadt, the rookie, was their third man in that rotation. And we said last year in the playoffs that that could be kind of their detriment. That could be what ends up killing them. Brandon Pfaadt ended up having a phenomenal postseason, but now you round out that rotation. You already had two great players at the top. Zach Gallen, a Cy Young candidate, followed by Merrill Kelly as your number two. They bring in Eduardo Rodriguez from Detroit as your three. And now Jordan Montgomery, a guy who was really kind of the two-man for a team in the Texas Rangers that won a World Series last year, is really kind of the fourth pitcher in that rotation. On top of that, you have a nice little contrasting rotation. You have Gallen and Kelly, two right-handers. You bring in Rodriguez and Montgomery, two left-handers. So there's a nice little divide there in that rotation, and you're getting Jordan Montgomery still in really the prime of his career at 31 years old, coming off a great year where he ended up being traded to Texas midseason from St. Louis, ended up pitching in a total of 32 games, ended up having a 10-3 record with a 3.20 ERA. That was the eighth best in the MLB, 166 strikeouts. So you get a really reliable veteran guy in that rotation. So great move by Arizona. And that NL West is looking really, really tough, man. That is a very tough division. Obviously, you know about the super team over there in LA with the Dodgers. You have San Diego making some adjustments, adding Dylan Cease in the offseason. San Francisco, who's been on a little bit of a spending spree in the past month or so, they go out and get JD Martinez. They go out and get Matt Chapman, as I mentioned. Add some depth in their rotation as well. And, of course, Arizona making moves. So that is going to be a very tough, competitive division over there in the NL West as Jordan Montgomery lands with the Arizona Cardinals, who were in the World Series just last year. Staying in that division, though, to those Los Angeles Dodgers. It's also worth noting, by the way, before we move on from Jordan Montgomery, I never want to pass over an opportunity to rip the Red Sox and their ownership and John Henry. The Red Sox, the third most valuable franchise this season coming into the year, only the Yankees and Dodgers were evaluated as more profitable or more valuable. Their value, $5.96 billion. And keep in mind that one-year $25 million contract for Jordan Montgomery, who the Red Sox have been linked to all offseason, that one-year $25 million contract, yeah, apparently that was a little bit too steep for the Red Sox, who couldn't land Jordan Montgomery on a one-year $25 million contract. Come on. We'll move on, but I won't go down this rabbit hole because I could go on a tangent, as you well know. But the Sox, once again, yeah, that was too expensive. That one-year contract was too expensive for Jordan Montgomery. Pathetic. With that being said, as I mentioned, Montgomery, not the only player in that division to get a fresh contract. Over to that super team, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Today, they extended their catcher, Will Smith. He gets a fresh 10-year, $140 million contract extension. Their catcher not going anywhere. That 10-year, $140 million extension makes the Dodgers catcher the fourth highest average paid catcher in the MLB. JT Realmuto, number one on that list, followed by Salvador Perez, then Wilson Contreras, and then Will Smith. Now, getting around $14 million annually, is the fourth highest paid catcher in Major League Baseball. Another good deal for the Los Angeles Dodgers, as Will Smith has played his whole career in the Dodger blue. He came into the MLB in 2019, has been with the team since then. Last year, coming off a year where he played in 126 games, had 19 total home runs, 76 RBIs, and bat 260 on the year. He's been right around that 260 clip as a batting average for basically his whole career. A staple in that lineup, bats around the five spot. A great great extension for the Dodgers, as they have Will Anderson for the next decade. Just 28 years old, entering the prime of his career. So the Dodgers with another, all offseason long, they've just been making great move after great move. And of course, extending their battery behind the plate. Another good new move by the Los Angeles Dodgers. Sticking in the National League, some news from Cincinnati. The Reds second baseman Matt McClain underwent surgery yesterday to repair a left shoulder damage. He's going to be out indefinitely, and they're not right now ruling out the possibility of Matt McClain missing the entire season. That would be huge. The team said there is a wide range of possibilities regarding McClain's timeline to return. The hope is to have him back by the end of the MLB season, but they're taking it slow on the 24-year-old. Really, Matt McClain was a guy who originally was slotted as the shortstop of the future for Cincinnati, but Elly De La Cruz came onto the scene, so Matt McClain got pushed over to second base, had an outstanding season last year for the Cincinnati Reds. There was high hopes on him coming into this year, and now it looks like he could miss an extended period of time for Cincinnati, so a tough hit for them on the eve of opening day. I mentioned we talk a little Baltimore here. Major League Baseball owners have unanimously approved private equity billionaire David Rubenstein as the new owner of the Baltimore Orioles. The accelerated sale, which will eventually give Rubenstein his ownership group, 70% of the Orioles, was unanimously approved because the Angelos family had just done an awful job owning that team. It's always funny when you see, like, we saw it with Dan Snyder in the Washington Commanders / Redskins, how when there's a bad owner in place, it doesn't even really matter who the new ownership is. The rest of the owners in that league will just unanimously approve it. Just like the sale of the Washington Commanders, and here in the MLB, you see MLB owners unanimously approve the sale of the Baltimore Orioles, because at the end of the day, you're thinking there saying, well, it's better than the Angelos family. It's better than the alternative. It's better than what it was. So, yeah, whatever. Whoever wants to own it, sure, we approve, whatever. So that has been made final. David Rubenstein and his group will own the Baltimore Orioles, and already making moves, of course, Corbin Burns, most notably. Last bit of MLB news here, updating you on the Shohei Ohtani situation. Shohei Ohtani's representatives declined yesterday to answer questions about which authorities they have contracted to report their allegation of theft against Ohtani's former interpreter. So we talked about this yesterday, how Ohtani basically said, yeah, I didn't bet on anything. That was all my interpreter, Ipe, had nothing to do with me. And I mentioned that there was still things that they kind of left out, like how Ipe was able to get into Ohtani's bank account, and how Ohtani didn't realize $500,000 leaving his bank account. They didn't touch on that. So there was reporters asking repeatedly for information on when the Shohei, was a victim of massive theft. They were asking, well, who did they report this crime to? That was the big kind of question that was asked yesterday. So when asked yesterday to provide proof that Ohtani or his representatives have reported the theft to an investigation agency, a spokesperson for Ohtani declined to comment. There was no confirmation from any local, state, or federal agencies that could investigate allegations of theft that they received a report from Ohtani's camp. The Department of Homeland Security confirmed to ESPN on Tuesday that it is working with the IRS to investigate Ohtani's ex-interpreter, Ipe, but would not specify whether it was looking into Ohtani's theft allegations or if it had been contacted by Ohtani's representation. So Ohtani, while saying and claiming that there was theft, that theft has not been reported to any law agency. So while they are saying, yeah, he was stolen from, that theft has not been reported at all. So it kind of furthers the storyline of, okay, so is Ipe, the former interpreter, possibly just taking the hit for Ohtani and saying, yeah, it was all me, I apologize, while Ohtani kind of quietly pays him under the table for his silence? Or they might be trying to sweep something else under the rug. All in all, it does raise some eyebrows, the fact that Ohtani and his representation are being a little bit hush-hush on everything here, raising some speculations. I'm sure more will come out about this, but the fact that they have not reported the theft to any law agency at all and have declined to comment on that is a bit strange. I mean, you would think that if you had been stolen from, you would want to report that as quickly as possible, right? Like, if you had millions of dollars stolen from you, that's probably something you would want to report to an agency. And yet, from what everything that's been told from Ohtani's camp, that's not the case. So I'll have more updates on this, but some weird stuff going on with Shohei Ohtani in this whole situation, and I'm sure more will be come to light here in the next few days, weeks, and of course I will have that for you here on The Big Ticket. But with that being said, I'm going to hit a break here. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Big Ticket on 101.1 FM and AM 1540.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Your friendly officers here at Arrest a Pest serve and protect area homes, families, and businesses. Arrest a Pest has been providing the fix since 1986. No matter the pest, it ends in arrest. Arrest a Pest today. Call 738-3766. Pests, you detest them, and we arrest them. Hey, who loves you, baby? ArrestaPest.com. 738-3766.
Did you know one in three young people will grow up without a mentor? Big Brothers Big Sisters is an incredible organization whose goal is to support the development of healthy youth by addressing their need for positive adult contact.
Join Nairobi in making a big difference today by supporting Big Brothers Big Sisters and donate your clean, like new clothes.
To donate today, visit any of your neighborhood Cottage Furniture and Mattresses locations or go to Cottage.com.
Your contribution can create a huge impact on someone's life.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, a Pfizer vaccine.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
In this festive time of year, you know that Seth and the crew will come through with a vast array of timely values at Fifth Ward Liquor. Stop by and see for yourself. Discover Bailey's Irish Cream at $27.99, Jameson 750s at $35.99, and Powers Irish Rye 175s at $39.99. Fifth Ward stocked with the finest in Irish whiskeys. Proper 12 Irish whiskey is $29.99. Green Spot's in stock, as is Middleton Very Rare and Jameson 18 Year. And here's another great value. Jameson Orange Spritz in 4 packs, just $13.99. You know you can depend on Fifth Ward Liquor for their tried and true trio, selection, service, and savings. Fifth Ward Liquor, 695 Lois Thames, 847-4545.
The fun starts quicker with Fifth Ward Liquor. You better take the fifth.
1540 WADK is online at WADK.com. Now giving you the information you need day and night at WADK.com.
Right back here on the Big Ticket. Talk a little NFL, some minor free agency news here across football. Pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney has agreed to terms with the Carolina Panthers. It's a 2-year, $20 million deal with a max value of $24 million. Jadeveon Clowney is from Rock Hill, South Carolina. And now becomes the second player to play for the Panthers from South Point High School. The former Stephon Gilmore was the other one. And with that being said, the Panthers have reached out to free agent cornerback Stephon Gilmore to return to Charlotte. So trying to get the high school boys back together as Jadeveon Clowney has reached a contract with the Carolina Panthers, his hometown team. And now the Panthers are trying to get the gang back together, getting Stephon Gilmore in town. We'll have to see about that as Gilmore remains a free agent. As for another free agent, wide receiver Josh Reynolds is signing a 2-year deal worth up to $14 million with the Denver Broncos. Reynolds, formerly with the Detroit Lions, now headed to Denver as Broncos have recently lost Jerry Jeudy. So he will come join a wide receiver room that includes Cortland Sutton, Marvin Mims, to name a few. But Josh Reynolds, really kind of a security blanket for Jared Goff last year, headed from the Lions to the Denver Broncos. No more big news really across the NFL today. I had the rule changes yesterday, some free agent signings today. But with that being said, we'll talk a little NBA here as there's around 10 games left to go, kind of revisiting my prop bet futures from the start of the season, kind of some of those awards and what really still has a chance to win. So, I mean, coming into the season, my MVP, I had Jason Tatum at plus 750, with the long shot being Anthony Davis at plus 3,000. I don't really think AD has much of a shot to win this. Right now, the odds-on favorite is Nikola Jokic, grabbing his third MVP of his career. That's the odds-on favorite. But I'm looking at these guys, the non-favorites, that I think still, I mean, there's only 10 games left, so you don't have a lot of time to really make your case anymore. But still, some non-favorites, I think, still have a shot. As I mentioned, Nikola Jokic, the odds-on favorite, he's at plus 1,100 right now. Excuse me, minus 1,100. Right there, number two to him, SGA, I really do still think has a shot. I mean, SGA has been incredible. He right now, depending on what book you're at, has around plus 900 odds to get the MVP. I would take a jump at that. I mean, SGA, the numbers he's put up, plus the defensive statistics, the advanced defensive statistics on SGA are really kind of telling. He has been outstanding. He has been outstanding defensively, one of the best net-rated players in the game. I would take a look at him, as well as, again, I know Jason Tatum's odds, he has the fifth best odds right now to win the MVP, but I do think there's going to be some media personalities out there that do say and kind of side with Stephen A. Smith, like, how do you ignore the best player on by far the best team in the NBA this season? So I think both those two guys still have an outside chance. Luka Doncic has the third best odds. I don't think he's really in the running. I think the fact that Dallas is so low in the standings, they've been so inconsistency, and the defensive rating for Luka, not quite there. Giannis, still a chance as well. But if you're going to go with a guy from the East, man, I'd say it has to be Tatum over Giannis, just comparing those two teams. So that's where I'd say, you know, if it's not Jokic, those two guys, I'd still say have a little bit of a chance if you want to sprinkle some money on them. As for sixth man of the year, It looks like it's going to be Malik Monk from Sacramento. Still with an outside shot is Norm Powell and Naz Reid. But really, when you kind of compare those guys, I think it's got to be Malik Monk. I think Malik Monk really will end up running away with this award. Coming into the year, I had Rui Hachimura at plus 2,000 odds. Rui kind of has had to be integrated into the starting lineup because of all of the Lakers' health issues, so that one's kind of out of play. Malik Monk looks like he's going to run away with it, and well-deserving. He's had a really good year with Sacramento, so that certainly is well-deserving. As for Rookie of the Year, that's another one to me. That one is closed. Chet Holmgren had a nice little run at it there for a while, and you can make the case if you're one of those people, well, Chet plays on a better team. San Antonio has been atrocious. But with that being said, Victor Wembanyama, man, his stats speak for themselves. I mean, you realistically could give him the Defensive Player of the Year nod. He has been that good. He's got a ton of blocks. He's been outstanding, in the top five for blocks this year. Over 20 points per game. He's just, the numbers speak for themselves. Wembanyama will run away with that award. So if you're putting money on that, I don't think that's a smart investment right now. Yeah, Brandon Miller from Charlotte has really had a really nice second half of the season. He's going to look like a stud over there in Charlotte for the next few years. And Chet Holmgren, again, he'll be great. He's going to be great for OKC. But the Wemby numbers just speak for themselves. He'll end up running away with that award, in my opinion. The Most Improved Player Award, this one I got to pat myself on the back for the ones I rarely get right here. I actually had Tyrese Maxey at plus 1,300. So if you were listening back in October when I was doing this segment and you sprinkled a little bit money on Tyrese Maxey for Most Improved Player, you're welcome. You're welcome, because Tyrese Maxey looks like he's going to run away with this award. He's at around minus 200 odds to win. It varies by book, but he's the odds-on favorite. It's really helped out by the fact that Alperen Şengün from Houston got hurt 2 weeks ago and looks like he's going to miss the rest of the season. He really would have been the only real competition for Tyrese Maxey for Most Improved Player. Kobe White deserves some credit for Chicago, but Tyrese has been outstanding. I mean, he's really kept Philadelphia afloat in the absence of Joel Embiid. Tyrese Maxey deserves a ton of credit. That's another one similar to Rookie of the Year, where if you're not betting on Maxey, I wouldn't really sprinkle. I'd stay away from putting any money over on that one, because it looks like Maxey will run away with that award. Same thing with the Sixth Man of the Year award with Malik Monk and Rookie of the Year. Let's get to one where I do think there is a chance that the outside favorite might not win. Defensive Player of the Year. Obviously, Rudy Gobert, the odds-on favorite at minus 1,200. Victor Wembanyama, after that, has the second-best odds at plus 800. I still stand by what I said about Bam Adebayo. Coming into the season, I had Bam Adebayo at plus 1,200. I stand by my Bam take, man. He is a guy that can guard any position. He doesn't get as much love as Rudy Gobert, but I still see him as a prolific defender. He's top five odds. It may not hit, but I know that there's a lot of media personalities out there like Shaquille O'Neal that are not as high on Rudy Gobert and not as high on the impact he makes in a game. I do think that Bam Adebayo is one of those guys that can defend any position and is locked in from start to finish, from first quarter to fourth quarter. I still think that he could, if you want to sprinkle a little bit of money, outside odds there. Bam Adebayo is well-respected across the NBA and a great defensive presence. So that would be the one where, yeah, there's a possibility, and I stand by my original pick. Last one here, Coach of the Year. It does seem like, and for good reason, like OKC's Mark Dagnow is going to run away with this award. He's at minus 450 odds to win it. In fourth, with the fourth best odds, is Joe Mazzulla at plus 1,400. I don't really understand this. And I understand that, yeah, he's got a ton of talent. No doubt about it. But I don't think people understand Joe Mazzulla's becoming the coach of the Boston Celtics. He was thrown into the wind a week before the season last year with the Ime Udoka situation. Brought Boston to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Obviously, that was disappointing. And now has by far the best record in the NBA. And yeah, obviously he has a loaded team. But yeah, so does Phoenix. They have superstars. So does Denver. They have superstars. So does Milwaukee. They have superstars. So if the knock on Joe Mazzulla is that he's got a ton of talent, I don't follow that. Because sure, he's got a lot of talent, but he's done a great job with that talent. Look at the impact and look at the improvements that Sam Hauser has made this year. Look at the improvements that Jaylen Brown has made both on his left hand and his defensive ability this season. Look at the improvements of Peyton Pritchard this year as well. Look at the fact that Drew Holiday came in being really the second scoring option with Milwaukee, and he's taken a step back, had to be humble, had to take sacrifices, and become really like the fourth scoring option in Boston. Joe Mazzulla is all a part of that. So the fact that Mark Dagnow, again, listen, he'll probably end up winning this award, but the fact that he's just running away with it flat out over Joe Mazzulla, I don't really stand by that. Another one for me is Chris Finch, who also has plus 1,400 odds to win this award. Chris Finch over there with Minnesota, he's been done an outstanding job. A lot of people, including myself, never thought that the Twin Tower approach of Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert was going to work. But they've made it work this season. Minnesota has hung strong right at the top of a loaded Western Conference all year long, despite injuries to Karl Anthony Towns. Anthony Edwards missed some time. Rudy Gobert did as well. He's done an outstanding job as well. So Mark Dagnow probably will run away with this, but if you want to spring, I still think there is an outside chance for a guy like Chris Finch, for a guy like Joe Mazzulla as well. So, hey, 10 games left. The favorites really are the favorites at this point for a lot of these awards. There's not a whole lot of wiggle room to make it close races here and there. But again, SGA MVP, I still think there's a chance. Nikola Jokic, the odds-on favorite, I still think there's a chance for SGA, maybe Tatum. As for Defensive Player of the Year, I still think Bam has a shot. And Coach of the Year, Joe Mazzulla, Chris Finch. I think they're great candidates as well. As for those other awards like Most Improved Player, Rookie of the Year, and Sixth Man of the Year, I think it's kind of closed at this point. The favorites are really the favorites there, but we'll have to see. With that being said, I'm going to hit a break here. Going to come back and wrap up the show with the bold takes. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Big Ticket.
Give the star in your life the brightest gift in the world. Name a star after them. This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $59 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, you can name a star for birthdays, weddings, or even memorials. Over 45 years, we have named millions of stars for celebrities and individuals from around the world. The star you name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Visit starregistry.com or call 800-282-3333.
The following is a summary of the general contest rules for 3G broadcasting. For a contest, entry requirements will be announced on air. Winners will be determined in accordance with the criteria set forth in the on-air announcement. 3G broadcasting is not responsible for unusable entries. Station is not responsible for entries not received due to technical difficulties. Station is not responsible for any lost, disconnected, dropped, misdirected, or incomplete telephone calls. Entrants may be disqualified at the sole discretion of the station. Each contest is open to all station listeners who are legal United States citizens 18 years of age or older who reside in the station's listening area. The station shall have the right to change these eligibility requirements based on the individual contest in question. Listeners are eligible to win a contest only once every 30 days. Only one winner per household is permitted in any contest. Participants in the contest must possess valid government-issued photo ID and sign a liability release as a condition of receiving any prize. Winners must meet all eligibility requirements. Prizes will be announced within the specific contest on-air announcements. Contest prizes are non-transferable. Winners will receive a 1099 IRS tax form if the total of all prizes won for the current year equal more than $600 in value. Prizes are limited solely to those items explicitly set forth here, and it shall not include any or all expenses, incidentals, or taxes that may arise out of the winner's receipt of the prize. Decisions of station management with respect to the contest are final. Odds of winning vary per contest. Payment of all federal, state, and local taxes are the sole responsibility of the winner. Winners will be required to sign an IRS Form W-9 or the equivalent. Failure or refusal to execute the release will result to the winner forfeiting the prize. Photo identification and social security number of the grand prize winner may also be required in order to collect the prize. For internet contests, the station, at its sole discretion, reserves the right to disqualify any person tampering with the entry process. The station reserves the right in its sole discretion to modify the contest rules and dates at any time for any reason. No purchase is necessary. The contest is void where prohibited. Copies of the written contest rules and a list of all the winners are available during regular business hours at the main studio of the radio station, 23 Connell Highway, Newport, Rhode Island 02840. From Newport RI, 1540 WADK and WADK FM 101.1.
All right, back here on the Big Ticket in our final segment, so it's time for the Bold Takes, where I take a player, a team, and a stance. Before I get into my first player tonight, a quick update on our boy Mike Greenberg of ESPN. Greeny, I said yesterday, had just an absurd take where he said that UConn would beat teams in the Eastern Conference. They'd beat NBA teams. Well, everybody, including myself, blasted him online, criticized him, said you're an idiot. And Mike Greenberg today said, no, I was kidding. No, it was all a big joke. UConn would probably go 0-82. They would go 0-82. They wouldn't make the playoffs. I was just kidding. So after he got bashed online, criticized nonstop, he finally went back and said, no, it was all just a joke. I was just kidding. Good try, Greeny. Good try, buddy. But Mike Greenberg, just maybe don't have those types of outlandish takes when you're like the highest paid ESPN employee. You might get a little criticized. But my first player tonight is Ice Cube. Yes, Ice Cube apparently has offered $5 million to join Ice Cube's Big Three League. That's that three-on-three competition where it's just three-on-three games. He's offered Caitlin Clark $5 million. He confirmed it. And he said the deal would be for 8 regular season games and potentially 2 playoff games. And it would also allow her to play in the WNBA. Seems like a pretty good deal, dude. Like, a total of 10 games in a 3-on-3 tournament and you're getting $5 million for? Not bad. Not bad. He went on to say, the skeptics laughed when we made Nancy Liebrin the first female coach of men's pro team. And she won the national she won the championship. It's not a national championship. She won a championship in her first year. Then Lisa Leslie won it in year 2. With our offer, Caitlin Clark can make history and break down even more barriers for women's athletics. I love it. I would love to see Caitlin Clark in this league. I thought it was cool seeing Lisa Leslie in the 3-on-3 league. That's awesome. And I think Caitlin Clark's going to be even better. So, hey, I like where Ice Cube's coming from. Give it a shot. Why not? I mean, I always kind of thought that the 3-on-3 league was a kind of a cool idea. It just kind of opens up more individualistic styles of play. Like Luka Doncic would be nasty in this league because you can have a guy be super ball dominant. And I think anybody who's played basketball can agree that playing 3-on-3 pickup growing up was kind of the perfect number. It really was, like, for the smaller courts and whatnot. It was the perfect number doing 3-on-3. But this would be awesome. I mean, it'd be... honestly, like a pretty easy payday. You could still play in the WNBA and then just collect a quick $5 million for playing in what would be a total of 10 games. Not bad. Not bad at all. Ice Cube, take your shot, man. Ice Cube, my first player tonight. My second player tonight is Russ Cook. If you haven't heard of Russ Cook, he has spent the last year running the entire length of Africa. He's averaged more than a marathon a day for 340 straight days. And it will end up being one of the greatest athletic accomplishments ever. And on top of that, he's raised, while doing this, like the whole purpose was to raise money for charity, he's raised over $340,000 for charity. Just running, he's on a mission to become the first person ever to run the full length of Africa all for charity. And he's done so while running through sandstorms, just crazy weather, and also doing it like not in running clothes. He's like doing it in like jeans and cargo pants and whatnot with a backpack. He's just the real life Forrest Gump. He's the real life Forrest Gump and doing it for a good cause, man. But with that being said, it's cool, awesome. It doesn't seem fun. I watched some of the videos of him running through like a sandstorm, running up these steep, like mountain-like inclines. It all in all, just does not seem fun whatsoever. He's gone through like two different pairs of shoes while doing this, just ruined shoes. More than a marathon a day is and for 340 straight days. That's just nuts. It's a total of, he's gone through 15 total countries and the equivalent of 368 marathons. That's what he's done over the course of a year, a total of 368 marathons. Your body has to be in shambles. In shambles. I don't know, like, oh my God. After like a tough workout, the next day I'm like, oh man, I'm just going to sit on the couch when I get home. That's enough for me. This guy's doing it every single day. That's nuts, man. The real life Forrest Gump. This guy puts Forrest Gump to shame. I applaud it. I tip my cap, but it does not seem fun at all. Russ Cook, my second player tonight. My third player tonight is Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman, the most recent player who was not happy with the Dynasty docuseries on Apple TV. We talked about this, about how it kind of depicted Bill Belichick. So Julian Edelman, the latest player who just wasn't happy with some of the stuff, and I get it, he spoke out about Wes Welker. He was talking about Wes Welker making up stories to make Belichick look bad. His comment here was, Welker's out here saying that Aaron Hernandez got away with murder, figuratively speaking, at practice. That's not true. Welker painted the picture that he was like the king, talking about Aaron Hernandez. Like he got to do anything. Edelman went on to say, I remember Bill, expletive, yelling. I'll say yelling. That's not the word Edelman used, but Bill yelling at Aaron all the time. Come on, Welk, trying to make up stories. We know you don't like Belichick. Basically saying that Welker, and I remember this part of the docuseries. If you watch the docuseries, there was a point where Wes Welker was commenting on the Aaron Hernandez situation and basically saying, like, Aaron Hernandez was able to get away with murder at practice. Figuratively speaking, that probably, for Edelman and I, was not the right word to use. But basically saying that Aaron Hernandez could do whatever he wanted at practice. And Edelman was like, no, that's not true. Like, Bill Belichick treated Aaron Hernandez, yelled at him constantly, just like he did everybody else. This was in a conversation with Matthew Slater after Matthew Slater was brought on Edelman's podcast. And Slater also took the side of Belichick, saying that the docuseries kind of painted him in a bad light. He went on to say, I'm not sure how I feel about everything. It's tough. I know there's some comments that I made on there that made it seem like Bill was just very demanding. And he was. But I also want people to see there are multiple sides to Bill. It's tough because I feel like he's being portrayed in a certain light. And we're painting a picture, but we're only showing people part of the picture with Coach. It's very complex. And there are things that were tough. And I'm sure we're all like, hey, maybe we wish we had done things this way. But let's make sure none of us forget the fact that the dynasty is not even being talked about without Bill Belichick. And the things that he did were intentionally and purposeful. Edelman went on to say, and he said, I honestly think if you're in your 30s and you played football, I don't think you ever liked your football coach. You loved him, but you didn't like your football coach. Work's not easy. Doing the little things to prepare, doing walkthroughs, I hated it. I complained about it all the time, but we needed it. That's why we went into every single game knowing and more out prepared than any other team. It's what came. It came down to execution. So I love that. And again, that was chalky there. I apologize. People might be laughing at my reading skills right there. But Edelman and Matthew Slater, both add them to the list of players coming to the side of Belichick and saying that's not how it was. And this is a day after Robert Kraft said he was disappointed on how it made Bill Belichick look. Like, wait a second, you're disappointed, but yet most of the bad comments towards Belichick were made by you, and I'm sure you had final say on all of the editing. So that was a little bit hypocritical, I think. But more and more players coming to the aid of Bill Belichick, and I loved Edelman kind of attacking Wes Welker, saying, Wes, come on, like, we all know you didn't like Belichick. Don't go on a documentary and try to bash him with fake stories that we just know aren't true. Like, I remember watching that episode and hearing Welker basically say that Aaron Hernandez was able to get away with anything he wanted at practice. And me thinking, wait a second, that doesn't really seem like the Belichick way. And here's Julian Edelman saying, no, that's not true. Like, Belichick would yell at Hernandez just as much as anybody else. So, Julian Edelman, Matthew Slater, I appreciate you guys. My third player tonight. My fourth player tonight is Ian Eagle. You might hear Ian Eagle on the call for some of these March Madness games with his partner, Bill Rafferty. Bill Rafferty, a veteran, a legend, around 70 years old, been talking college ball for as long as I can remember. And Ian Eagle, the play-by-play guy, said he can't go out drinking with Bill Rafferty anymore. He said he's waved the white flag on late nights with Bill Rafferty. He said, I started leaving early. Whether it be an Irish exit or whatever you want to call it, I recognize for me, I was not going to bounce back the way that he does. He's superhuman. I wasn't going to test it anymore. I accepted defeat. I waved the white flag. So Ian Eagle was talking about going out grabbing drinks with 70-plus-year-old Bill Rafferty after these games and saying, I can't do it anymore. This guy can outdrink me, and then the next morning, he's just fine, whereas I'm feeling terrible. It's very relatable because we all kind of know that one friend. We all have that drinking buddy where you're sitting there like, buddy, you might want to slow down. You're going to be feeling it at work tomorrow. And the next day, they're just like, yeah, no, I'm good to go. I'm all good. We're ready. So Ian Eagle, very relatable. I understand it. And it's funny that 70-year-old Bill Rafferty still hasn't lost his fastball. And he's just still drinking dudes under the table. I love it. Ian Eagle, my fourth player tonight. My fifth player tonight is DJ Burns. DJ Burns is the big man for NC State that has captured the heart of the nation. DJ Burns, he looks like he could play offensive tackle. Like if Bill Belichick was still coaching in the NFL, he'd be watching these NC State basketball games going, ha ha ha, I found my sixth round pick. Because DJ Burns can move. He can move like a point guard, but he's like 300 plus pounds, 6'8". He is a unit of a human being. It has now been because he's the media darling now. He's the talk of the March Madness. He's been on a ton of podcasts. On top of having NIL deals, he's also started buying vending machines and making profit on vending machines as a little side hustle. He's got t-shirts coming out of DJ's vending. I love this. It fits him perfectly that this guy's also making money on vending machines across North Carolina. I love this little side hustle from DJ Burns, and I expected nothing less. He is so fun to watch, and I got to be honest, I'm rooting for NC State here in the Sweet 16, but DJ Burns, my fifth player tonight. My final player tonight, real quick, is Nolan Arbaugh. Nolan Arbaugh is a paralyzed man. He's 29 years old, who was implanted a Neuralink. It's a brain chip in his brain, and without using his hands, there was a video that came out of him playing Mario Kart just by thinking. So because of this Neuralink brain chip that was implanted into his head, he was using this to play video games. There was a video that came out of it. He can't use his arms, can't use his legs, but because of the Neuralink brain chip, he was able to play Mario Kart with his friends. Science and technology is just getting nuts now, man. Like, awesome, crazy. And Nolan Arbaugh, you know, is able to play with his friends and pretty cool. But man, absolutely nuts. I don't even want to understand how that even works, but pretty cool. Science and technology is nuts. Nolan Arbaugh, wishing you the best. You are my final player tonight. All right, my teams tonight, it's the eve of the Sweet 16. So I have an all underdogs parlay in the NBA for you tonight. We're starting on the early game on ESPN, the Philadelphia 76ers at home against the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm taking the Sixers at +6.5. Both of these teams have been slipping of late. I'll go with the home team plus the points. I'll take Sixers +6.5 tonight. The late game on ESPN, I'm standing with my Phoenix Suns take. Both Bradley Beal and Yusuf Nurkic questionable for this game in Denver against the Nuggets, but I'm going to take the Suns at +7.5. I stand by my take that I believe Phoenix can be a very tough out come the playoffs. I'm taking the Suns at +7.5. That's the late game on ESPN. And then my bonus game tonight, I'm taking the Houston Rockets at +4.5 in OKC against the Thunder. OKC will be without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Houston is going for their 10th win in a row. They are right behind Golden State for that final play-in spot. Let's go, Houston. I'm rooting for you. We're taking the Rockets +4.5. To lock that parlay in, I'm taking the Philadelphia 76ers at +6.5, the Phoenix Suns at +7.5, and the Houston Rockets at +4.5. Lock that all dogs parlay in. Get yourself some walking around money and support those local businesses. All right, my stance tonight. Major League Baseball, again, we're on the eve of the Sweet 16 as well as the eve of opening day in the MLB. And Rob Manfred, when he talked about the next few years in baseball, he addressed that he wants two expansion teams. A lot of people speculated that would come from Salt Lake City and Nashville possibly, but he's been adamant that he wants two expansion teams. My question here, my stance tonight is, MLB, do you really think expansion is a good idea when your bad teams are really, really bad? So there was a post today that there's four consensus worst teams coming into this MLB season. The White Sox, who have already started trading pieces away, the Rockies, the Oakland A's, and the Washington Nationals. And someone online put all four of those worst teams together to make one super team. And even when you put those four teams together, those four teams I mentioned, the lineup is still pretty ugly. It really is. Like, I don't think that this team could compete with a Dodgers. I don't think this team could compete with really anybody in the top tier of the MLB. That's how bad it is. I mean, in this speculation, your best player would probably be CJ Abrams or Nolan Jones or Luis Robert. And hey, MLB casuals out there, let me just hear me out. Do you recognize any of those players' names that I just mentioned? Based on combining those four teams, this would be a super team of four different teams. And honestly, I don't even think that they'd be a 500 team. And that's with combining four teams. And yet the MLB has remained adamant that, yeah, let's add two more teams. It's just going to create more really bad teams amongst the MLB. The more I look at it, I'm thinking, are you sure? Why is that the plan? Let's just make MLB more respectable and less relevant and more competitive. Let's focus on that first rather than bringing in two more teams that probably won't be that good, at least for the first 5 years or so. Like, what are we doing here? With that being said, that is going to do it for me here in the studio. I'll be back with you tomorrow, same time as always. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. You've been listening to The Big Ticket with Teddy Horn on 101.1 FM, AM 1540, and WADK.com. Have yourself a phenomenal night.
WADK Newport, powered by BD Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Tiverton. WADK, the voice of Newport.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The U.S. says Israel's prime minister has agreed to reschedule a delegation visit to the White House. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says the U.S. wants to discuss alternatives for Israel's planned military operations in Rafah, along with the ceasefire.
We don't want to see this war go on a day longer.